Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 18th. I'm Ray Graff. It's time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Winter is coming. We'll get those wheels ready for winter. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barbara and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, towing, and used car facility. We welcome your calls right now. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It is generally a popular show when Gordon is on, so call early and prepare to wait a little bit. Again, the number is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The one and only Gordon Fricke and your calls coming up after the news. Well, I've never been called rootin' tootin' before, but I'm rootin' tootin' Ray Graff, and this is Vox Pop, and welcome to it, my friends. It's Gordon Fricke Day today. We'll talk about your car and why it's making that funny noise and smelling. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's a repair, towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. If you have a question, call now. 800-348-2551. Still a couple of open lines. Then it gets really busy. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Several people have done that already as well. And we'll get to those in a minute. Gordon Fricke, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing great. How you doing?
Well, old rootin' tootin' is doing pretty dang good.
Oh, man.
I tell you what, buddy. So what's new over there at the shop?
Well, you know, the intro, you said that I've been in the automotive world for over 30 years.
Yeah.
But you and I have been doing this for like 12.
Oh, so it's now 40 years?
No, don't say that, please.
You are
old. Don't date me.
Wow, okay.
We're not going to change the intro.
Shall we call you Tootin' Common from now on?
Hootin' Tootin'. You're Rootin' Tootin', I'm Hootin' Tootin'.
All right, fair enough. Right. So we have several emails, and I thought, first of all, let's do another engaging episode of that exciting segment you call What Would
Roger Think?
All right, and this is a good one. And you were explaining it to me in the break here during the news, and I got actually angry about this.
I saw you.
So go ahead.
Well, so I had a longtime neighbor and friend in the shop yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was looking at his truck for a leak. And we were just talking, and I had a vehicle next to it that I was replacing a headlight bulb in. It was an HID light.
Right.
So I said, this is a pretty expensive light. I said, these are like $125 or $140 just for the light bulb.
The part, yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot of labor to change it. Other times it isn't. This particular vehicle wasn't.
Okay.
He said, I just was talking to a friend of mine a couple days ago, and she took her car because the headlight was out, and it was $1,200 later she got the light fixed.
Ridiculous.
So I said, what bulbs could cost that much money? Well, she has a late model car with LED headlamps, and you don't replace the bulbs. So the LED portion of the headlight failed, and she didn't have any beam, and the only alternative was to replace the whole lamp assembly, which required probably at least an hour's worth of labor taking the bumper cover partially down to change the lamp. So,
you know,
turn the clock back.
Okay.
Let's turn it back to 1965.
Yeah.
Your headlight is out, and you bring your Le Mans into the corner garage for a new headlight.
I did it myself.
Yeah. Four screws.
Yeah.
The light came out from the front.
Yeah.
You unplugged a wire to the back of it and then put it all back together, and you were in great shape for probably back in those days, $4. Maybe even less than that.
I did it many times into the 80s for a handful of dollars and 20 minutes of time.
Taillights now are in the same boat.
That's
you've seen those beautiful LED taillights. We talked about that
I
earlier.
Hate them. They're too bright.
They are too bright, but they also, when they flash, the light kind of dances across the lens like the old Mercury Cougars used to do.
You know,
Well, go replace, if anything fails in there, any of those little LED segments fails, and per New York State inspection, all those little LEDs have to be working, now you got to replace the entire tail lamp assembly. So you're not selling a lot of light bulbs.
In fairness, those LEDs should last longer than the incandescent bulb.
Should is the key word, and it is true. That is correct, because sometimes they will last the life of the car. That's correct.
Right.
Although I've replaced them because they didn't.
Yeah. Okay. Now, are you just trying to make me angry?
You notice, though, I try to brighten you up when I bring in the 65 Le Mans.
Yes.
That's a bright spot.
But that also hurts.
Well, that's true.
I don't have that vehicle anymore.
Yes.
All right. Tom wrote in, bearings. On my 2013 Ford Explorer, where are the bearings beside those in the front and rear wheels? And that's from Tom in Gardner, Mass.
So, I mean, is he talking about just any bearing in the vehicle? Or I think he's talking about wheel bearings, right?
It just says bearings. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so wheel bearings, as Don can probably attest to, are a very common failure item in today's automotive world. The bearing is assembled, sealed, and oftentimes pressed together as a unit, and it bolts into the vehicle, and if it fails, you replace it,
right?
Just like those LED lights.
Yeah.
But they're subject to wear and tear, potholes, cornering, salt getting through the seal, getting into the bearing. So anyway, each car has obviously a bearing per wheel, and they can be murder to change on some vehicles. They get corroded in there. You can't get them out. You have to use heavy pulling and pushing equipment. Can be an awful job.
Oh, I tell you what, I don't know how you got into this business, but it must be very lucrative. Let's see. Joseph writes in, last month an older woman called in saying her friends urged her to get a newer model Honda than she had really loved and was in good condition. Gordon's advice on the condition of the car was correct and accurate. I think possibly her friends were thinking of the benefits of technology in newer models. I have a 2019 CR-V and find its driving technology very useful and feel much safer driving it. And that is from Joe in New Jersey. Agree or disagree?
It's a good comment because in many instances, today's vehicles are far superior to stuff 10, 15, 20 years ago. In the case of the caller that we had last month, she indicated that she was not interested in learning and adapting to a new vehicle.
Yeah.
She was older, yeah. and our brains don't like all the changes and all the gadgets and all the new stuff to learn. So if she was perfectly happy in that car, and I think the emailer was correct in saying that was, the right thing for her.
Yeah.
But when I get into a modern car and get accustomed to it, the features are gorgeous, but it's so much stuff to figure out.
I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I'm not sure when, but my wife's aunt was over at the house and we were hanging out and she said, oh, can you move my car into the driveway? People had left so she had a Prius. I thought it was the Starship Enterprise. I didn't even know how to turn the thing on. I had to come back in and say, well, how do I do this?
And then when you push the button, my first intro to some electric and full hybrid cars, 10 years ago, bring the car in for whatever, tires or a service or whatever, you push the button and all of a sudden it's silent. Nothing's happening, right?
Yeah.
You put it into drive or reverse.
Right.
And you're assuming you're going to hear noises and you don't.
Yeah.
And I kind of at first said,
is this on?
There's something wrong. I didn't start this thing right.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. This email from David in Woodstock. My front Michelin all-season tires are at 6:30 seconds. My rear ones are about 4:30 seconds. Should I replace the rear tires now or wait a bit?
Well, we're going into winter driving season very soon.
Right.
The general rule is on most tires, you don't want to be below 5:30 seconds going into bad weather. He's already below that on the rears, and he's close to that on the fronts. And it was an all-wheel drive car, I believe. So most all-wheel drive cars can't tolerate too much difference in tread depth because it makes the tires turn at different speeds.
Yeah.
So he's probably cruising for four new tires soon.
Ah, yeah. Cha-ching, eh? Fred writes in, and then we'll take a break. The number here, by the way, is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpopwamc.org. Subject heading, appreciate Gordon.
Mm.
Just want to tell Gordon I appreciate his contribution to the station. Glad he's still doing it. That's from Fred Cheney, now at Nehmer of Saratoga.
Oh, Fred. I remember Fred from, let's see, Fred was at, I think, Carmody Ford and then at a Chrysler dealer. Great guy. Great advice. He's one of these guys you could call up and ask questions and get answers.
Really?
Call some of these dealers today, and it's like, I don't know, calling General Motors. Nobody can tell you anything. They got to transfer you, put you on hold, have somebody call you back, which never happens.
You know what? This show has rapidly devolved into two old guys complaining about modern times.
I know it. Maybe we should ramp it up a little bit.
You think so?
No.
All right, let's try to get hip. Let's play some music. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Well, I don't know if the kids will find this hip, but have at it. There they are, K-pop favorites twice doing that particular tune. 800-348-2551 is the number. Just trying to be hip, you know, for the kids. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's cars and complaints. Let's go to Sean in Albany. Sean, you're on.
Good afternoon, Ray. Always good to hear you. And Gordon, nice to meet you. Quick question. Here's what I've got. Brought it to a few places. No one's been able to diagnose it. Whenever I'm at a stoplight or stop sign or starting the car for the first time, whenever I start pulling forward, there's a rushing water sound that comes from the dashboard. All the fluid levels seem to be full. Nothing's leaking or anything weird. But whenever I start from a stop, there's a rushing water noise. I've had other people drive it. They hear it too. And I'm just curious if you could be the one to diagnose this.
I bet you can.
Well, can you reproduce that sound by not having the vehicle in motion, just slowly bringing up the engine speed? Will it still make that sound, do you know?
Only motion.
Got to be moving.
Yeah.
Okay. So if it's a rushing sound when the engine speed increases, it's almost always air in the heating, in the heater core, in the coolant that goes through the heater.
I was going to say clogged heater core. That's
yeah,
a good
or air in it from either having coolant service done and it not being fully bled out or you know, in this case, probably not, but combustion leaks can put air into cooling systems.
But that's not it.
But if the rush is only when the vehicle is moved forward and back, could there be water in the cowl below the windshield wipers where all the air comes in to the heating system, and then also the rainwater from the windshield and wipers then is allowed to drain out and basically behind the fenders. So I haven't noticed that on Colorados, but I have had various European cars get clogged cowl drains. And I'm talking gallons of water.
I think we had a Blazer, Chevy, like a 2000 Blazer that had that same issue from time to time.
Yeah, I've had these cars come in after big rain and the water be a quarter of an inch or half inch from flooding the car going into the where the pollen filter is, the cabin filter.
Yeah.
So if it's a situation where it's not engine speed or heater related, it's got to be a pond somewhere in there, and it could be clogged drains.
Hmm. Could it be? Is there a sunroof on that thing?
I do not have a sunroof.
No, that's a good thought because sunroof drains plug and bring water into the vehicle also. I've also seen water indoors. The door drains plug up, and the water sloshes inside the doors, but you think it's coming right from the dash.
Yeah, it sounds like the dash. Could it be a mouse that's plugged up the drains or something like that?
Well, it could be, or just all the debris that sneaks in there over the years. Is the vehicle parked outside primarily?
It is.
Yeah, I'd be very curious about the drains that we just spoke about.
Uh-huh.
Poke around in there and see.
All right, Sean.
Well, thank you very much for the homework.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Gordon Fricke today. 800-348-2551. Mark is in Lee. Hello, Mark.
Ray, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
You got me on?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for taking my call. I got a 2005 Toyota Camry. My mom gave it to me after she passed, God bless her. It's got $235,000 on it. I'm going to try to get, I want to get one more winter. Now, I've been out hunting for cars for the last couple of days. And I'll tell you, I test drove a Honda Civic, a Honda Accord, and also a Toyota Corolla, brand new. And I'm just struggling a little bit. I'm looking around.
Yeah.
So the question is?
The question is, can I get away with driving this car one more winter without the transmission dropping out?
What if the transmission dropped? What if Gordon says yes and then something happens? I mean, that's kind of a no win for Gordon. All right, what do you?
I know. I got 235 on this car.
It's almost to the moon, man.
You mean you can't call your doctor and say, "Am I good for another year?"
Yeah.
No. All kidding aside, that is a very solid long life car, and I've seen Camrys come in with mileage like that and greater. What I always recommend people do is get it into a reputable shop, somebody you know and trust. And just check the car out for, in this car's age, in the case, you know, corrosion and rust, just to make sure there's not structural areas that could be getting compromised, like the subframes.
Well, the body's fantastic on the car as far as the age is concerned, I think.
Yeah.
And I just had maintenance stuff replaced. I had a power steering rack, brand new power steering rack put in a couple months ago, and I just had a brand new starter put in.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the things that fail on most cars at some point, and this Camry lasted a long time.
Yeah.
If your mechanic says everything seems good, and, you know, part of the thing with automatics is servicing the fluid at the right time, and if it's never been serviced, now may be too late. So you want to be really careful about shocking transmissions.
I change my oil every 3,000. No, I've been doing that since I was 16 years old.
Yep.
My uncle said, taught me to do that when I was 16. So yeah. I've taken care of the car quite well.
My gut feeling is, knowing that it's a Camry, that yes, you can push this car through this winter and then think about something in the spring or summer.
Now, remember, Mark, this is not legally binding in any way. If the engine drops out tomorrow, it's not on Gordon. But, hey, good luck, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Gordon Fricke, Tom is in Hillsdale. Tom, you're on.
Hi. So I have the last manual transmission in Columbia County, I believe, and I'm having a problem with my clutch.
Mm.
I've taken it to a supposed Volkswagen specialist, and nothing happens. And it seems to be worse when it's cold. The car is kept in a garage, but unheated. Any ideas?
What are the symptoms? What is it doing wrong in your view?
A couple years ago, the first time it happened, the clutch pedal went to the floor. I got towed back from Westchester County or driven back. I'm sure the car wasn't on the road. my garage, an AMC underwriter said, you just pull up the pedal. And so when... what I've been having to do is leave it out of gear on the parking brake in the garage, and so that I can start the engine and then try to get some clutch pedal. The first time I press the clutch, it goes to the floor and stays there.
Yep.
I have to pull it up somehow by hand sometimes. Then usually the clutch will disengage and I can back out of the garage. Hmm.
So how many miles are on this vehicle, roughly?
83,000, 4,000.
Okay.
It's about the time a clutch will go.
Well, clutches are so individual, though. A clutch can last the life of the car, or it can last one weekend. Depends on whose left foot is on it.
In other words, if my daughters get a hold of it.
Exactly.
Right, understood, yes.
So what your clutch has, and most do today, is a hydraulic actuating system. There is a unit up top called the master cylinder that pushes the fluid down towards the unit.
The master cylinder has been replaced.
Now, the slave on that car is the cylinder down at the transmission.
Right.
And I'm not sure on your car if that is outside of the bell housing or inside of the transmission housing. But if
I haven't specifically asked him to check that, but I got I was having trouble and things just completely stopped working in the clutch department.
Right.
I got stuck in a supermarket parking lot. I had to get towed to the garage, and I burned out the clutch.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, the flywheel was okay. But so he replaced the clutch. He felt he had to replace the starter. So it was a pretty big bill, but I'm used to them.
All right.
Anyway, any thoughts on, so you think maybe slave cylinder?
So are you back to the clutch going to the floor?
Yes.
Okay. So if the slave cylinder, when he did the clutch, since your clutch master was replaced already, I would have recommended doing the slave while everything's all apart and going back together.
Right.
If the slave cylinder never got replaced, that could likely be your culprit.
Uh-huh.
It's unlikely that the clutch master has failed, although who knows what got put in. Maybe a knockoff part of poor quality.
Yeah, there you go.
And the problem with the hydraulic system is both units are always under suspicion when you have a pedal falling to the floor.
Right.
So that's what they've got to gear up to is slave cylinder. And then be a little suspicious of the master, even though it's been changed once.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Let's go to John in Saratoga. John, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, good. Welcome.
Thank you. I have a 21 Nissan Rogue, and it does this thing where when I'm driving on, say, the Northway, and I go over the bumps between the lanes, like between the concrete pavement, and if the bump is even slightly elevated, the car jerks to the left all the time. It'll do it on slower roads if the bump is bigger. But mostly it's a highway thing. And if you're driving at speed at 65 or 70, then the car, you know, becomes almost dangerously unmanageable.
Right.
Oh, boy.
And I've had it looked at two Nissan dealers, and they didn't find anything. I had it looked at a private shop, and they did a front end and rear end, front wheel and rear wheel alignment. And they balanced the tires, they checked the air pressure, and that didn't solve it. And they didn't see anything else, and they didn't have a clue, and neither does the dealer.
How many miles
are... 60,000.
Okay, yep.
And it's been doing it for 30,000 of those 60,000 miles.
Wow.
Okay, wow.
It didn't do it right in the beginning.
Did you buy the car new?
And... I didn't. It was a certified used. I bought it in 22. It was a 21. And one other thing is one of the Nissan dealers, as I'm telling the service advisor, what the problem is. The girl said, well, I've got a 23 Rogue and it does the same thing. So, and then I started looking it up online and realized that there are like 77,000 reports of this problem. And so I started a case with Nissan, but that's kind of going nowhere, and they want me to pay for everything up front before they would, you know, consider reimbursing me buying the car back or whatever. So I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions what you think it could be.
So that it could be a situation called bump steer, and it's kind of what it says. You hit a bump, and it makes the car steer slightly in, and it steers in the direction of the bump. You hit a bump in the left, and it makes the wheel go to the left. Is that what's happening to you?
This, it always goes to the left.
Okay. It's possible, two things that it could be, but you've had the car checked quite a bit. A weak front strut that's not leaking, looks good, feels good, but doesn't have the valving something has failed internally, will cause you to bump steer. And the front struts are so important on vehicles like that. So it could be something going on with one of the struts, and or the geometry of that car is not perfect. And if so many other thousands of people are complaining of the same situation, it's possible that in the design of that vehicle, they got a little bit sloppy, or inadvertently it's developed into these bump steers, and you can't align it out of it because it could be something that was designed slightly improperly. But that's high tech stuff. But I would be suspicious of a weak strut just to rule that out.
All right, John, thanks for the call. You know, and I'm not saying this is the case, but you bring up a suggestion that maybe it's a design flaw. And if that's the case, you can't really put out a service bulletin if it's the shape or geometry of the vehicle, right?
Well, if Nissan recognizes that this is affecting so many cars, and they said, okay, we figured it out, we just solved it, we changed the caster angle, and now the cars are great, and then the bulletin would go out to all owners, bring your car and we've got a fix.
So it might someday be fixed.
It might. However, Nissan is not in very good condition as a company right now.
Oh, really?
And they are not going, they don't have the resources to plow at certain problems if they haven't hit the radar of safety, NHTSA. So,
well, now to be clear, and you know, just in case Nissan's attorneys are listening, you know, we're not suggesting that there is a system-wide flaw.
Not at all. No, and I'm not aware of any. But until they hit safety concerns, they generally won't address it unless the company is really looking to make sure everybody's extremely happy with their product.
All right. Gordon Fricke's our guest. One email here, and then we'll hit the break, and then we'll come back. 800-348-2551. Looks like all the lines are loaded at the moment. When you hear somebody hang up, give it a shot. Hey, you never know. Timothy writes, every so often the check engine light comes on in my 2005 Honda Accord. Whenever I get it checked, they always tell me it's just a simple problem with my gas cap. They replace it, and then I'm on my way. But I wonder, the gas cap looks okay. It never seems like it's broken. Is this just a Honda problem? What is actually going on with the gas caps?
What the car is determining is a very, very small, what's called an EVAP leak. So the vapors that are in the gas tank and in that whole fuel system are supposed to be 100% contained. And the system is determined that a tiny bit is escaping. And it turns on a particular light for a code that says it can say very small leak, or large leak. And generally the very small or small ones are capped to filler neck seal issues. And we have to clean up a lot of the filler necks where the cap screws down due to rust and corrosion.
Right.
And sometimes it's very, you know, the corrosion is bad. So you got to really go in there and clean it, sand it, and then we put some silicone grease around it to create a better seal. So it's either they've been having a series of bad caps, or corrosion around the neck, and the new cap solves it temporarily.
Some cars don't even have caps anymore, right?
A lot of them are capless now.
Yeah. Which is very disconcerting.
Well, it's a great concept until it does what this caller just called in about. And if it leaks, you don't just replace the cap or clean the neck. You replace the filler neck assembly.
Oh, fantastic.
Sometimes, and I'm sorry to do this again, but to the tune of like $600, $700, $800.
Splendid. All right. let's take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's Gordon Fricke today. We'll be back with more of your car calls coming up. Woody Herman and the orchestra, the Thundering Herd 3, I believe, and that's doing the Zappa tune, America Drinks and Goes Home, here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. One email, and then we'll jump back to the phones. Lines are crazy loaded
today. I see that. It's all green.
Chris writes in, says, hello from Medusa, New York, where not everyone's a looker. I've been a base model 2017 Honda Sonata. I have one. The steering has been feeling very stiff around 12 o'clock on the wheel. I don't notice it in more urban areas, but on long stretches of road where a bend comes, it nearly seems to lock up. Takes a concerning amount of force to get it to unlock. That sounds scary, Gordon.
Well, that could be a problem.
You think?
What we see quite a bit is the steering shaft that connects the steering wheel to the steering rack. So picture the steering wheel with the shaft going out into the engine area or to the front wheels. That shaft has to turn a corner or two to get down to the steering rack, so they put universal joints in there. And usually if one or more of those is exposed to the elements, at some point in time they can corrode and make the steering stiff and hard to turn. And temporarily, I've been able to spray them externally with a good penetrating oil and work them a bunch of times and free them up. And when that frees up and you solve it, you know 100% it's the steering shaft joint, the universal joint. So that's probably, I'm guessing, is probably what's happening to this car.
Okay. You know, just an aside here. Have you ever driven a funny car or one of those drag racers?
No. I've driven funny cars, but not a funny car.
But, I mean, you're just going straight down a track.
Yeah.
Do you even need steering?
Well, to keep the vehicle in control, yes, but you're definitely not doing a lot of steering unless the car goes haywire.
Do they still do that anymore? I used to love that.
Well, there's definitely drag races going on all the time. Yeah. I don't know about actual, you know, there was that funny car craze.
Yeah. Remember that? The 70s, good old 70s, 60s. All right, let's go back to our phone lines. Gordon Fricke's our guest. We'll go to Rotterdam. Sandy, you're on.
Hi there. I have a 2017 Nissan Frontier pickup truck, four-wheel drive, and it does the weirdest thing sometimes. When I pull in the driveway and I park it and turn it off, and it sounds like there's an animal crawling around in my glove box.
I bet there is.
Like a little scratching, ticking thing that happens. It's kind of weird.
Maybe it is.
It doesn't happen all the time.
Do you own a ferret, Sandy, by any chance?
No.
No? Okay.
No. I'm ready to put my cat in the car for the night.
That's a plan.
So how long does it make the noise for? So you're
I pull in the driveway, I turn off the truck, and all of a sudden I'll hear, what's that over there? You know, and it sounds like literally like there's something moving around in the glove compartment.
Yep. How long does the sound last?
And then it'll stop. Huh?
How long do you think it lasts? Like 10 seconds, 20 seconds?
They scratch a little bit, maybe for about 30 seconds or so, and then you don't hear it anymore. And it doesn't always happen.
All right.
I just came home, and I was sitting there waiting for it to do it, and it didn't do it.
Yep. When you're turning the blower motor on for heat or AC, does that sound normal, or does that sound noisier than it used to?
No, it's normal.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, I've had my heat on today. Yeah, that's when I don't even use my heat or my AC.
Yep. So in the heating systems, there are electric motors, little servo motors that open and shut various doors and vents in the heating system to move the air around if you want it to the windshield or in the middle or down at the floor. And it's possible that you're hearing the system, when you shut the vehicle off, go back to a neutral position, or one of those motors is being commanded and you could be hearing that.
So it's not necessarily the end of the
world.
It
may not be. What I would do is this. Before you shut the vehicle off, note what your heating system is set to. Let's say you're on defrost and that's the only time you hear it. Change the settings and shut the car off and see if you can make the sound go away.
Uh-huh.
And then you know that it's a heating ventilation door or motor moving. And like Ray said, it really may not be anything of any concern. As long as you got proper heat and AC and everything's working fine, it may be something you don't want to...
And it happens, right, but like I said, it happened when I'm not using my AC or my heat. And it's kind of weird, and it only happens...
On
the right side of the car.
Or do you have separate heating for left and right sides on that vehicle? Different? Can you adjust the temperature?
Passenger side heating?
Oh, yes, I can. Yes, I do have that.
Yeah, so you've got two little miniature heating systems in one there. So I'm thinking something's going on with one of the servos on the passenger side. You could also do this. Before you shut the car off pulling in your driveway, turn off the heating system. Push the off button. And make sure it's turned off for 10, 15, 20 seconds and see if that eliminates the sound.
Ah, okay. That's
a good... At least that'll tell you where it's coming from.
Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Sand Lake, and it's Nate's turn. Hello, Nate. You're on.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a 2010 Jeep Commander, and there is a draw on the battery. And I figured it's definitely the radio. So my one question is, if I replace the radio, will that draw go away?
So how have you determined that it is the radio? By taking the fuse out?
I disconnected the fuse. I also took the radio right out.
Yep.
And, yeah, it was 90% better.
Yep.
But there's still another draw. I think that's off of the it's definitely from the ignition area because I disconnected that. You know, I went through disconnecting fuses.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what it was. So it's those two areas. It's the radio. And basically my question about the ignition is, I was thinking maybe it's the automatic car starter that came from the factory automatic car starter. I'm wondering if that's an easy disconnect.
Well, it could be. And current draws today, even though yours is a 2010, they're much harder to trace than they used to be.
Huh.
You used to be able to pull fuse by fuse till the problem went away, but today, everything has computer modules that are constantly looking to stay charged.
Everywhere.
And when you unplug one and then plug it back in, it takes a zap of power because it says, oh, it's time to fire up, get all the capacitors charged and ready to go. But if you think you've eliminated it by the radio, a vehicle of that age, you could probably get a used unit somewhere, eBay or whatever. And and see if the problem goes away.
The radio?
Yeah.
But, I mean, don't some of these radios of that vintage, aren't they connected to the security system?
Some are, and they're also, now, a 2010 probably not, but you talk about a late model vehicle, all the modules, a lot of the modules are on a data loop, so they're all talking to each other and linked. So you can't change stuff today without reintroducing the new module to the system with programming.
Yeah.
But on this 2010 Commander, I think you could get a used factory radio from a salvage yard or on, you know, online and change it and see what it does.
You know, I have issues with I have a 2011 vehicle and I'd like to change my radio out, but I can't for the life of me figure out how much work it would be to get in there. I mean, it's not always that easy just to get in there.
No, they're integrated. They don't pop out like they did back in the day where they were just a separate unit.
So does Nate even have a shot of doing this if he gets a radio?
Yeah, on that vehicle, you can change the whole unit.
Well,
I've done them before.
I've had that radio out and put it back in.
Oh.
Yeah,
so,
they're...
You know, I mean, it's easy.
Oh, so it's your fault.
It's an all-in-one unit. It's a backup camera. It's a navigation. It's like everything.
Yeah.
And that one radio.
I think it's similar to what was in Liberties of that era.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would change it.
Probably.
And try it.
All right,
yeah.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call to Middlefield, Massachusetts. Chuck, you're on.
Well, good. Okay, I've got a 2006 Jeep Grand Cherokee with a six-cylinder engine.
Okay.
And if I get in the car right now, I can drive it, and there's no problem for 5 or 6 miles and turn around and come back. But if you drive it for like a half hour to an hour, shut it off, go and buy some beer, come back out, it won't start. It turns, you know, just da-da-da-da-da-da. But if you put your foot all the way down to the floor on the gas, it might start.
When it does start after that, does it sound like it might have gotten flooded? Does it kind of sputter and run poorly for a few seconds before it straightens out?
You know, I never noticed that. I don't think so. I think it just, once you put it all the way down to the floor and leave it there and you turn the key, it just starts up.
Right. You could have a leaking injector, fuel injector.
Oh, they injectors, there's no carburetor there.
No.
Right.
It could be that you've got some injectors that are getting plugged up and the tips are not shutting off properly. And it could be dribbling some gasoline in there. So you're getting, in effect, a flooded engine when that happens.
Huh.
Putting your gas pedal to the floor opens up the air valve, so it helps get some of that extra fuel, some extra air, and it burns it up and goes. And a quick and easy thing to prove that out would be a few tankfuls of a very good fuel additive in the gas. There's a good chemical out there called Tecron, and it's in different bottles of different.
And there are several brands, right? The STP, yes. And is STP still a thing? I don't even know.
It is, but you definitely want to use the professional stuff. That's, you know, big black bottle, 20 ounces usually, and it will keep those injectors clean.
What is it called again?
Well, one of the products, the chemical Chevron developed it, and I think they call their chemical Tecron. I think they named it.
But there are several in the aisle if you go to your auto parts store that are of the same ilk. The question, though, I have for you, you said it could have been a leaky injector. How is that going to fix a leaky injector?
No, not leaking externally, leaking into the engine.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's,
I gotcha.
It's dribbling into the intake, and then you got raw gas in there that's got to go
somewhere.
So
it needs a cleaning, basically.
Yeah, and this additive, if that's the case, can, you know, clean those injectors
it
up.
It can't hurt, though, unless you do it too often, right?
Yeah, don't put in 10 tankfuls in a row, but the bottle will tell you not to exceed 2 or 3 per oil change.
Yeah.
Because it can get into the oil.
Okay, well, Chuck, good luck on that. Appreciate it. Now let's see, to Deerfield, and it's Ed's turn. Ed, you're on.
Yeah, I have. I recently became smitten with this. It's a 2024 Mustang Mach-E. It's brand new, and it's a leftover. And my wife and I both have old cars, so sort of thinking one of them's gonna go.
Yeah.
Can you talk me out of this? Because I drove it, and it seemed really nice.
I've seen them, and I love them.
I don't know. Yeah.
Talk you out of the Mach-E.
I drove it and it was great.
Yeah.
What's that?
No, to talk you out of one of your old cars or keeping the Mach-E?
No, I didn't buy the Mach-E.
Talk him out of the Mach-E.
It's got a vortex and it's sucking me in, and I just want to know, should I be talked out of it or should I?
You got to go with the flow sometimes. Yeah, can you fight nature? I don't know.
Well, what you've got to do is analyze.
I don't know.
Yeah, you got to analyze your driving needs and conditions and access to charging and trips and traveling and see if the EV makes enough sense for you.
It's a beautiful car, though. Mercy.
Yeah. And tons of power.
It seems really nice, and I don't know. I just. I was pleasantly surprised when I did the test drive, having never driven electric before.
Well, the nice thing is, you're buying it from a legacy automaker, so it's not like you're buying a startup company that may not be around in 5 years. And if you need support, there's a lot of Ford dealers out there.
That's true.
You know, so it's, you know, you got to weigh it out.
Ed, he's not talking you out of it, man.
No, I can't because you got to do what's right for you.
You know, I remember when I was a kid. Well, not a kid, but young, much younger, and Plymouth came out with Prowlers. And I said, it's like a hot rod. I got to get one of those. Thankfully, I fought the urge. I guess it was an underpowered vehicle, and it looked great. But,
You don't see them on the road anymore.
No, they were trying to hit it with a retro car.
Yeah.
And the biggest mistake they made was not putting a V8 in it, because everybody that wanted a car like that had to have a V8 Rumble, and it didn't have it.
Nope. All right, let's go to Yorktown Heights or just old Yorktown. Lauren, you're on.
Hi. I have a problem with my 2011 Camry door unlocking mechanisms. So the key fob unlocks the front door only, and the mechanism on the door also unlocks the front door only. I have to manually unlock all of the other doors, and the key fob will lock everything, and the manual controls on both the driver's side and the passenger side will lock everything. It's just an unlocking problem.
Hmm.
Nothing unlocks except the front driver door.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so nothing unlocks unless you put the key in?
No, I just have to manually push the door unlock on the passenger doors.
So
I have to manually unlock it with my finger.
Ah.
So if you have the car locked up and you're not in the vehicle, how do you unlock it?
Key fob, driver's side door only, and I think the battery's going. And this was when the battery was strong, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
If I double unlock it, it still only does the driver's side door. So
all
it's not a battery issue, because if I'm in the car and I'm pushing door unlock on the door, nothing unlocks.
So that happens from time to time, right? I mean, it's a mechanical issue, right, Gordon?
Well, I don't know, because it's an inconsistent. You don't have everything working the way it should be. And going, is this an 11 Camry?
2011
Camry. 2011, yes. Yeah, so it's not ultra cutting edge, but it's not ancient.
much like ourselves.
Do you have another remote? You say the battery's getting weak. Have you tried new battery just to see what that does?
Yeah, if I was able to sit in the car and push the door unlock button and everything unlocked, then I would know it was the fob, but it's not.
Yeah. It could be a problem with the locking system, which is computerized even in a car that age. And I don't know how much data you can get by scanning that car. I mean, the body controls definitely are scannable. I think it would need to go in and see if somebody can analyze it and just see, get you in the direction of this is what it could be, and do you want to spend that kind of money to fix it, you know?
Yeah.
Would it need to be a specific Toyota technician or a really good mechanic?
Yeah, a shop that has Asian software that will go beyond the check engine light. That's all.
Lauren, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. We're done here with Gordon Fricke. That was a fast hour.
Boy, that went fast.
We get the complaining and then time flies.
See, that's how we start the show now.
Yeah. All right, man. We'll see you next month. Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service at installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. And Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, announcing the new Flower and Arts Barn, featuring garden gifts, plants, handmade pottery, artisan crafts, and more. Balletflowers.com for details. Well, once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for listening. A million apologies to all those people left on the line today. This is only an hour show. I have a feeling it could be a four-hour show and there'd still be people left on the line. Sorry if we didn't get to you. We're going to do it every month until we expire, most likely. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Thank you, Ed. I hope the sandwich was good. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the train guys return to talk of trains of yesteryear, both real, toy, and imagined. That's tomorrow at 2. Trains. We'll see you then.